Welcome to Close the Door and Come Here, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast with heavy leanings towards our two favorite characters, Jaime and Brienne.
There, there was a bear up there, all black and brown and covered in hair.
Hi, I'm Clotho, and you can find me at Clotho Spindle on Twitter. And tonight I'm joined with Kama.
Hi, this is Kama, and you can find me at Oxford Splice on Twitter.
Chicky.
Hey, I am Chicky. I'm at the Chikrin on Twitter.
And Devin.
Hey, this is Devin, GD Harpo on Twitter.
We're going to be discussing Daenerys' first chapter in A Clash of Kings. All the usual trigger warnings for potential rape and violence. So Daenerys is left, she only has 100 people left in her Khalasar. It's mostly made up of women, children, elderly. They sound pretty pitiful by the descriptions, and she decides they must follow the Red Comet. Even though Daria, that's how it's pronounced, I forgot, tries to talk her out of it. The Dothraki call it the Bleeding Star, and, they believe it's an evil omen. So Dany thinks it's her destiny, and it appeared...
Oh, Clotho, you have to read the line that she says, because I had forgotten this moment. So she's looking up at the comet, I think, and she goes, "It is the herald of my coming. The gods have sent it to show me the way."
Oh,
it's that's like some straight up cult leader stuff right there. Yes, I'm gonna get hate mail for that, but I had forgotten this line. That is a little yikes, believe your own hype there.
She's you know, way more intense and about that stuff than I remembered.
You know, in this read through, I'm sort of reading her with the idea that she's crazy, and it's true. It's all over this chapter. She is absolutely bonkers.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that she's crazy here. It's just, you know.
Well, she's.
I mean, she's definitely experiencing PTSD. I mean,
Well, I don't mean that. I mean, that is natural. But I mean, she really does believe her own hype. I mean, you're right. And
yeah,
it's a little bit, I think, because she's so hot on the show, and she's sort of supposed to be so beautiful. You kind of ignore it, and now I'm like, no, she's. If this woman looked if she looked normal, people would be going, "What the hell is wrong with you?"
Yeah. And be scared, because I mean, the dragons, the thing is you could say, okay, that would mess with anybody's head if that happened to you. But at the same time, it's then how far does it go? That's scary, because that's such a source of power, especially once they get big. I don't know how anybody could especially someone coming from the family she does, remain even keel.
Well, to be fair, I mean, having been raised by Viserys, she has been raised with this concept of being superhuman, you know? Yeah. And I mean, she, I think, always has somewhat believed this hype. And I think part of her recognizes it's one of the few things she has left. She's definitely aware that the dragons will make her powerful. She realizes she's vulnerable right here. But yeah, I think it's a lot of PTSD and just kind of leaning into all she's got left, which at this point is being a Targaryen and these dragons. And she is just clinging to both, for dear life.
She believes it's going to lead her to her destiny. She walked out of the flames or walked into the flames and walked out with the dragons hatched. She consults with Ser Jorah. She kind of talks with him, and I think briefly she considers going in different directions, but she's okay. He warns her that Pono, who was heading west to Slaver's Bay, would attack them. But she's oh, he's always kind to me, but he's no, it's over. He was the first to leave. They can't seek help from him. The only way to go is basically someone else, literally someone else where no one else is going, which is more dangerous. But so Dany makes the big announcement. She's got I didn't read that really kind of odd, this was it, a white tiger or something, some kind of getup she's wearing.
It's remember Drogo brought this back for her. He hunted down this white lion, I think is what it is meant to be. But I'm sitting here going, if it's this fucking hot, why are you wearing I guess to get her animal skin.
Yeah. Oh, it doesn't.
Nobody has the fur on.
It's so hot.
And would you want, like, she said that dragons radiate heat, and they're sitting on her shoulder when she's walking. Like,
yeah, I know she likes heat, but there's, like, liking heat, and then there's just being dumb. I was just like, this is, but that was why I was like, maybe you're supposed to read this as, like, she is just not, still not connected back to reality. I mean, like, she was very sick after the miscarriage, and clearly she's just kind of, I don't know, had a little bit of a break or something, I think. Like, it's just, there's a disconnect almost, like she's trying to reconnect to the world or something through this chapter. It's tough to read. I mean, you know, she's been through hell, like literal hell, literally sat in a fire for a night. I mean, like, you know.
And the people all sound miserable. And, you know, it's one of those things where, they don't have a lot of options. And she's, I guess, intimidating in the sense of, you know, what they see, obviously, with the dragons. And then
Yeah.
I wonder if there are people going, we should have gone with Pono. I mean,
I'm sure there are some, but I don't. You get
have to be thinking, like, maybe we should have left.
But I get the feeling, like, the way that they're talking, that they've become true believers because they watched her walk out of that fucking fire.
Yeah.
With dragons. So, I mean, you absolutely, like, they definitely believe. How could you not?
I know. It would be hard.
It's like, we'll hear about a dragon skeleton later in this chapter. So it's like, you know, everyone in the world knows about dragons and, like, knows that they're gone and that they used to exist and that it is a huge fucking deal that suddenly she's got three of them. I mean, this is how religions are born right here. Like, this is exactly how
I know. And the stone, you know, when they were basically like, what, like fossilized stones. So that's even more fantastical, you know, not just these eggs.
Speaking of the dragons. I am on a work laptop. Anyone who knows who I am, please don't narc on me. But in my search history, I'm like, I've got queries in there like, do reptiles suckle? Because
that was one weird thing I kept thinking. That is odd.
And it turns out no, they don't. Granted, they're dragons, but I'm like, they were eggs. They're not mammals. So what the hell are they nursing off of her for?
I'm glad you brought it up because I didn't put it in my notes, but I kept thinking.
Wildly dangerous.
Does sound dangerous.
Oh, God.
I think this is one of those times where I'm just like, I have to remind myself that when George started writing this series in like 1991, he didn't have Google. Like, you know,
was he married at that point? I mean, because this seems to be, or did he fail biology? Because this just seems like a fundamental misunderstanding.
Back then, like, you know, you'd be like, oh, what am I going to do? Go check out a book on
this? Yeah, he would have done that.
Well, it's fantasy, whatever.
Honestly, though, I seem to recall having learned since grade school, like, you know, about mammals and reptiles. Yeah. And I mean, just to be absolutely certain, I clicked and I did the searches, but you know, yeah.
In George's defense, I feel like this is the kind of error that I would make with Google. So,
yeah. Oh gosh, he's a weirdo. Like the imagery, I guess. But okay. They set out.
I hope I'm not close enough before you go on. I want to clarify. I probably would not have any dragons like drinking human milk from a human person. I mean, mistakes in this vein, not this particular mistake. Yeah, yeah. No, I wouldn't be where George is.
Yeah, he's always like the more bizarre kind of like sideshow, the better of things. Okay, they set out at night, 3 hours, so basically, like, 3 days after, horses and people began to die, so it's, like, it's just hard. And, you know, he just describes, it's just sad, you know, elderly people, and then there's one about, you know, that really got me was the baby who couldn't, so I think they believe that if you can't ride a horse, then you don't get, what is it, like, the Nightlands or something, you don't get the... the mother was, horrifically weeping. And I don't know if it's just she's been through so much. So she just kind of or maybe they're just so exhausted. Because it seemed like she was a little, I don't know. Maybe that was my reading of it. She's a little cold.
No, I feel the same way. Yeah. Almost like she's disconnected. Like everything's happening around her and she's just not connected completely to it.
Yeah, I mean, there's such significant amount of suffering going on. And I'm sure their brains, like with dehydration, starvation and...
Yeah.
Ser Jorah has a bad wound from when he was fighting Quotho. It's getting worse, and she's concerned about that. And She's also started trying to feed the dragons, like, raw meat, because wean them, but they refuse, and she's, like, thinking things, and she remembers Viserys is like, only men and dragons eat cooked meat. So once they start searing it, the dragons start plumping up. They're like, okay, this is good. They start eating and grow, you know, it seems like they're sort of growing dramatically. They're still small, but getting bigger. She takes turns, this whole thing, she takes turns letting one ride on her shoulder because they're not happy about being caged, I guess, you know, obviously, in the heat and everything. Or I guess the heat wouldn't bother them, right? The same thing with Dany? The heat wouldn't bother
You wouldn't think the heat would bother them, no. In fact, she does not describe them ever drinking water either, other than the drinking of the milk.
That's interesting. Yeah, why would they drink milk if they don't drink water? That's weird, yeah.
I don't know.
That's odd. Oh, man, so weird. She has decided she's going to name them Rhaegal, Rhaegar, and Drogon, you know, after her two brothers and Khal Drogo. They kind of go, the further they were, the worse the conditions get, the further they go. And she's, you know, she wonders if it's endless, and she sort of asks Jorah, and he's like, no, there's an end. There's, you know, you see maps and such, and the other towns. And she decides to send out riders, and they bring back news, like, there's a dead city. And you know, everybody in Khalasar is afraid to enter it, but Dany insists, you know, which I think this is a reasonable thing to do. Like, I thought she was practical here, and let's stop here. And there's fruit, there's plentiful water sources, and she basically tells them, like, she converts it into a way that's more palatable to them. Says, you know, the gods have led us here so we can recover our strength. So,
well, and again, we're touching on again where she is bending, like, different mythos and superstition around and reshaping it. And, like, there's just kind of a running thread here of her kind of playing with that thing. And it's just something I never really appreciated the first time through. Yeah. How, like, you know, this is the shaping of I'm going to say a cult, just because, like, in the technical term, that's probably what it would be at this point. It's just, you know, this is how you kind of shape, you know, basically a myth around yourself and everything, and how you bend the former belief system. And it's really kind of fascinating that he laid this in here like this, and I've just never thoroughly appreciated it before, but this is a good shot. So I was like, with this whole abandoned city, is this like some sort of nod to Lord of the Rings? This seems like a very Lord of the Rings type situation here. Maybe more Hobbit-like. I don't know.
We actually got a couple questions that kind of, I think, hinge on this. Ancient Octagon on Reddit asks, I agree with Ancient Octagon. They ask, the biblical parallels are strong in this part of Dany's story. Do you have any thoughts on what this could mean for her going forward?
Like, and the wandering in the desert business?
Yeah, I think. I mean, that was kind of how I took it.
Like a condensed 40 years of wandering in the desert.
Well, it's also very fairy tale-ist, you know, like, you know, the three riders go out and they come to this space, and, you know, it's definitely has that kind of feel to it.
Well, and it has the feel of something that might be written in a religious book later. I mean, everything from like this whole thing of her walking out of the fire with the dragons and the way she sends the three riders off and they return. I mean, yeah, there is very much the foundation of a religion in here. And yeah, so maybe that is part of
her Bible.
Yeah.
The start of writing her Bible is exactly what this is.
Oh, man. Yeah. It's kind of a nice little break there, I guess, for everyone before more horrible stuff happens. So Daenerys and Ser Jorah are having a conversation about the past. They kind of get this topic of, like, the past, the ghosts haunt us. And, you know, she kind of nudges him about, well, you know, do you have any ghosts to haunt you? And he starts explaining about his first wife. And I don't know. I saw that she was a Glover. Did they ever mention her first name, or just she was a Glover?
I don't know. I don't know. If he does say her first name, it's never caught in my brain. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think so. Yeah. I think she's sort of like Roose Bolton's first wife,
Lyanna. Lyanna, like, overshadows everything else in his backstory.
Yeah, the wiki of...
just Lady Glover.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and the wiki just says first unnamed Glover, okay. So I don't think we know.
So she's just kind of... it's sad. You know, she dies after... it's their 10th year of marriage, and it's a third miscarriage, so it's kind of like, you know, he's... and he did say, you know, he said they had a sort of companionable, and, like, were, like, you know, not love, but they got along. It didn't sound bad or anything. And not long after she passed away, he fought in Greyjoy Rebellion. He was made a knight, following, you know, Thoros of Myr to Pyke. He meets Lyanna Hightower at Robert's tourney outside Lannisport, and it's basically like this gaga love at first sight for him. It sounds like she's really young. I mean, you know, he's like, was it teens or something? I don't know. And
yeah, she's half his age. Oh, who knows how
it
old
it sounds
she is.
Like he had a giant midlife crisis.
that's a good point. God. It does.
She's a trophy wife. I mean,
oh my gosh.
Tell you what it sounds like is that he likes young women, girls. Because this is a running pattern.
It's so. He earns the champion's laurel for her, you know, the rogue names her the crown, the queen of love and beauty. So he's all like hyped up on this. And so he gets drunk afterwards. You know, he asks Lord Leighton Hightower for her hand in marriage, and who agrees? Who knew? And so they're married. Like, this is like a shotgun. They're married in Lannisport. I don't know. It just all sounds so wackadoo. Like, it sounds like a recipe for disaster. Like, you just knew, like, red flag, bad things were going to happen. And why is it just, what would be the, I mean, I guess he's from a major house. I mean, I don't know. I guess, you know, I was trying to figure out why.
It's hard to know what's going on with Leighton Hightower. The Hightowers definitely have something going on that we're starting to get more hints of at the end of Feast and Dance. I have always suspected that the Hightowers are the friends in the Reach that we'll hear about later. I don't know.
Well,
so
he has a whack load of kids.
Oh, okay.
I mean, yeah, he does. There's so like a lot. I mean, so even if you just want to go, like, just plain surface, that's a lot of children to get married off and to deal with. So there's that.
Okay, that makes
sense. And I mean, on paper, Jorah sounds good. I mean, it's sort of like, I mean, honestly, I can look at some of my friends who've gotten married to, well, not my friends, but people I went to high school with who married women half their age. You know, they sound good on paper. It's only when they get married.
Yeah, does he sound good on paper, though? It's fucking big.
Well, I mean, but if you don't know anything about that, like, he's the head of one of, you know, the Starks bannermen. He has his own thing. He only has sisters. There's no kids.
And he hasn't done anything sketchy at this point, right? I guess he's been upstanding.
Her kids would inherit.
I'm counting here. Now, granted, one of Hightower's kids is married to, what's his name? The Tyrell.
Oh, Tyrell.
But there are a lot of these children here, so who knows?
Wait, what's Mace's wife's name? Oh, God.
Larry.
Is she his daughter or sister?
I believe, according to this, I'm on the wiki. It looks like she's the daughter.
Oh, she's a Hightower.
Yeah, I knew she was like a Hightower. I just didn't know what the relationship was.
Oh, how old is Leighton then?
Old.
There are 10 Hightower children.
Oh, God.
And,
okay. He
and Lyanna is like,
she's one of
the youngest,
I think. Yeah, okay. She's young.
Okay.
Oh, so she's like a low. Oh, okay. Goodness. Yeah.
So he's just like ready to take my children.
You know,
like anyone could have asked that night. Any head of any house could have asked that night. And he'd be like, sure, please.
I mean, it's entirely possible that, you know, there's a deeper thing, or maybe Hightower is trying to, like,
maneuver,
you know, just spread his kids out so he's got lots of alliances, or there's some deeper conspiracy. Well,
we see him listen to one of his daughters later. So, you know, there's a chance. I always kind of assumed that it was Jorah romanticizing things, but there's a chance that she wanted to marry Jorah and that she just said, I want to marry him. And that was why it happened. That is a possibility.
Yeah.
She could have
just discounted it. But just knowing what I know about how Jorah looks and where he was coming from, I guess I never really thought she could have genuinely had a lot of
feelings. Well, yeah, I mean, especially if she's so, like, into jewels and she seems pretty shallow.
Let's not think about Ian Glenn here. Let's think about what Jorah actually looks like.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Balding, hairy as a bear, Jorah.
Oh, gosh.
Well, maybe, I mean, I'm just saying, like, you know, you meet somebody, they've won this tourney, they talk a good game. She's like, okay, there's just a bunch of sisters. There's no kids. Maybe he's talked up Bear Island. Who the hell knows? I don't know how bright this woman is.
Maybe you know, she feels like they'll give her some, you know, more status and she'll be her lady and
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. Maybe it was love. Maybe it was love on both sides.
Oh, I don't think it was love. I think I'm like she's looking around and he like seems like a good prospect.
I don't know. I hate to like throw Lyness under the bus because I'm like,
well, frankly, yeah, if I were married to Jorah, I would have ditched him. And I mean,
well, and after he literally is like about to be executed by Ned for selling these slaves. And it's like, we don't know that she condoned any of that at all. I mean, you know, we really don't know what she was thinking or saying or doing. And like, I'm not going to blame some teenage kid for being mad that they get stuck in the middle of nowhere when they're used to being, you know, in a very cosmopolitan place.
And you know, your sister-in-law who says that a bear fathered her kids. I mean, can you imagine being in that family?
No. I mean, like, especially since, you know, Old Town, as much as King's Landing is like the fancy capital now, King's Landing is very much a newer town. It's Old Town and Lannisport that are the really old and kind of like highbrow cities in Westeros.
Oh,
so
gosh, she's going. Really,
you know, she's coming from a pretty, you know, high in the instep type position here, and the Hightowers definitely are the foremost family in Old Town, which you know even the Tyrells have to try to deal with because Tyrells are relatively newcomers compared to them. So. I can kind of see how a teenager might be like, well, this sucks, you know, to get stuck on Bear Island coming from
with this gross man who's, oh.
So, yeah, so a lot of this weird on her, but yeah, she basically is immediately unhappy when she gets there. Jorah tries to make the best of it, but his idea of making the best of it starts to go sour really fast, as we said. His debt's growing. He's doing all these, like, really, you know, he's bringing shame to himself, as he describes, like, you know, to do things for gold. And kind of, like, it comes to a head when he asks her to sell her jewels, and she's like, no way. And, you know, pretty much they only last, like, 6 months, and... You know, when the money's completely gone, she takes off and moves in with this merchant named Tregor Ormolon. I don't know if there's a reason we get his name. Does he pop up anywhere else? Or
yeah, we will, I think, hear about him later.
Okay. Yeah, because I was like, why would they point him out? But yeah, so...
Anyway, I'm team I don't blame Lyness for this, really.
Yeah, I think most of us are probably... I guess what would have happened to her then if he had been so basically Ned Stark would have was he planning on executing or what was going to happen? What was his
not plan? Her? No, not her. Just him.
Fine,
just
Jorah. But she'd be stuck on Bear Island with the crazy relatives, and you know.
Okay. I'm sure the disgrace. I mean, she experienced the disgrace anyway, but I'm sure the whole thing would have been horrifying.
Yeah, because it's still a pretty big deal for her to do that, because she's essentially, I'm assuming, just leaving her family. And do they I didn't get a sense if they said where she I don't know if I missed that where she ran off to.
She's still in Lys, right?
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's in because he talks about where they ended up.
Okay.
Yeah, she stayed there.
Yeah. So she's okay. So Jorah admits, like, he hates her almost as much as he loved her, or loves... It's weird. He says he loves her, and then Dany asks, like, you know, what does she look like? And then he says, Dany. And that's when Dany realizes that Ser Jorah cares for her, too. So I don't know. It's sort of set in the present tense, but...
Although in this terrible conversation, George, like, has, like, Dany's... Because Dany's just sitting there in this lion belt yet again. And, like, completely naked underneath, apparently. And, like, it slips off her shoulder. And you see Jorah watching her shoulder. And, like, Dany doesn't pick up on it, but it's there for the reader. And so it's
just disgusting.
Creepy and gross. Yeah. And you're just like, God, Jorah, you're disgusting.
I think Devin's right. You got to get Ian Glenn out of your head because this man is a jerk and a self-entitled whiner, a disgusting old man, frankly.
I mean, Ian Glenn still would have been 30 or 40 years older. I mean, like, it's just like in any iteration, this is just gross. I mean, oh, God, Jorah.
Well, he has absolutely no regret about enslaving these people. I mean,
no. No, I mean, there's a little bit of self-recrimination when he tells his story, but not enough for me.
No, he's...
Okay, so since we are a Jaime and Brienne podcast, we should probably talk about the fact that Jorah beat Jaime at this tourney. But you know what I never really quite picked up on was They actually, neither of them definitively won. Robert got to choose who the winner was.
Yeah. Okay, that's what I was trying to figure out when I read that. I was like, what the heck does this mean? I was trying to exactly what that meant. Okay, so he didn't really.
Yeah, okay. What that means is that Robert was like, oh, it's a tie? Okay. Well, Jamie didn't win. So that's what happened.
So it's even more pathetic. I mean.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, that is sad. Oh, yeah, when you think about it. Oh, man.
I have no sympathy for him. None.
That's creepy. Neither, apparently. Well, Danny has some, because she's like, I'll give him back his home, but she's not.
Yeah, but Danny's
she's not about going for him. Well, she says in her head, like, he's not going to ever have me, you know, so it's like, yeah, so she's not
good for you, Danny. Yeah. Good. Fucking good for you.
Oh, gosh. Oh, so she calls her blood riders again, and the next morning she's like, okay, she commands Azago, Rakuro, and Jogo to go search to the southwest, the south, and the southeast, or various locations. We get report back, you know, from Rakuro first. Said there's only grassland to the south. And I know somebody, wasn't it one of, was he the one that saw the dragon? From one of them, I forgot who saw the dragon, because that was the part where they notated, I think, that they saw, you know, giant dragon bones in the wasteland.
Yeah.
Ago finds two abandoned cities, smaller, but they're smaller than, they've named this place Vastoloro. So, yeah, there wouldn't be a reason to go to either one of those. Jogo returns much later than the other three. And he's he comes back with three strangers from Quarth. Kind of get to the end here of the chapter. They introduce themselves as the warlock Priet Pri, merchant Zaro Zondos of the 13, and Quaithe of the Shadow. They want to see Danny's dragons, and she's happy to show them off, and that's where that ends. So it's, I just always picture the creepy guy in the makeup when I a warlock. I can't get him out of my head from the show, but
oh yeah.
He's very unique looking.
That actor really was suited to that. Yeah. I forgot about that, Clotho. So I just want to say at the end, like, Danny actually was doing a pretty good job of running the show in this crazy abandoned city that they're living in.
Yeah.
You know, she's having some good thoughts here.
That and upper cult, just fine.
I mean
she was doing practical, sensible things.
Yeah and seems to be figuring things out on her own too, which is a good sign for her going forward, as we will see.
Any other thoughts on the, well, I guess we have, after this we'll have mail, but any thoughts on the chapter before the mail? Or
no.
Yeah, it's pretty
well,
like,
we'll get more as we get further into this book. Yeah, we'll have more to say.
Okay, so what mail do we have today?
So Buck O'Hare on the Discord asks, so this is another one who brought up the biblical thing. So what do you make of the magi biblical vibes, as in the three people at the end?
Oh.
How much of this is set up Blood Raven, Quaithe, and George? I don't quite understand that last part, but
well, that's always the question, right? Is what is Quaithe's role? Who is she connected to in Westeros? And, you know, I don't know. I still don't know.
No clue.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of fairy, the bit about everything's in threes in here. If you notice, like, you know, she sends the three riders out. There's a lot of, and that's also shows up in the, I mean, three is a number that shows up a lot, but like, you know, that's very fairy tale too. I mean,
it's very biblical too.
And there's a lot of out there theories about Quaithe, right? Like pretty.
Yeah.
Like,
well, and you know, here's something. One of the things I've always thought, because you know, there's a pretty running. There are theories that she might be her mother. There are theories that Quaithe is Ashara Dane. There's a theory that Quaithe is Joanna Lannister, I believe.
Oh, that's weird.
I feel like here's the thing. There's a lot of discussion of Westeros in this chapter because of Jorah, and I just feel like if she was one of these people, George could have seeded in some mention of her family or something here, and he just didn't. And so I don't know. She might be Ashara Dane. I don't know.
I think she just might be some, you know, weird Essonian, you know, lady. I mean,
there's somebody out there.
I kind of doubt she's Joanna.
I think she's just Quaithe.
Yes, Quaithe.
Yeah, but I don't know.
We also had a question from CardinalGirl75 on the Discord, who said, I could have sworn Danny had a clue that Jorah was attracted to her before now, but apparently she didn't, as she received him in what was more or less bathrobe. But this is true. But did George have to double down on the grossness of this by having Jorah talk about how he had his share of women before he married his first wife? Oh. Seriously, who does that? Especially before the woman he considers his queen.
Oh, that was crazy.
Do you think that he was bragging about his prowess, or is he not thinking of his audience when he tells this part of the story?
Oh.
Both.
No, I had the same thought. Exactly.
He is such a clueless thing to do.
You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Heil telling the story about his last lover throwing soup in his head as a way to try to entice Brienne to marry him. I mean, it's just kind of like a tone deaf, not understanding what is attractive type thing, I think. Like, hey, I wasn't faithful to my first wife. Doesn't that make me appealing?
Well, you know, it's sort of like, and as someone who's often very long-winded, I know sometimes like you tell things that are not pertinent to the story, right? That happens. But, you know, you're sitting in front of a 14-year-old girl and you just, it's like he's laying out his sexual pedigree in front of her. Oh. Like, oh yeah, I had a lot of sex before I got, I mean, like, it's just so gross.
I know, how could he not compare himself also to Khal Drogo? Like, what in his mind? Because she is, she's comparing, she's like, yeah, nobody will beat him, like, in her head, like, especially Jorah, like, why would he think? Oh, gosh.
And the last thing we have is an Anon from Tumblr, who writes, not a question, but I stopped listening to your podcast for a while and I wanted to listen again, but I didn't know where I stopped. So I started at the beginning and boy, oh boy, were you so optimistic for the show and for the potential future of books at the beginning. It's kind of funny.
Such a call out.
I can't listen to those. Like, yeah, it's like, oh God. Ooh, so much hope. Sad.
I screenshotted this on Twitter and Guile just said something like sweet summer child.
Yes.
And that is our mail.
Okay, you could reach us at closethedoorand@gmail.com, on Tumblr at closethedoorandcomehere@tumblr.com. Submit questions to the chapter threads in the Jamie and Brand subreddit for us to read, and follow us on Twitter @DoorPodcast. Please like, review, subscribe to us on iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, Stitcher, all the places that you might listen. And please support us on Patreon @CloseTheDoor. Closing the door, get out.